You're listening to the We Speak Common podcast network. For more information and to support the show, head to wespeakcommon.com.
Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of the D&D podcast for everyone, because here we speak common. Brought to you in partnership with The Dice Dungeon and Describe. The Dice Dungeon is your one-stop shop for all things D&D, from premium dice sets to rolling trays and adventures, and you can use the code WESPEAKCOMMON to get 10% off your entire order at The Dice Dungeon today. And if you're looking for finely crafted box text to improve your player's immersion, head to describe.com, spelled D-S-C-R-Y-B. You can get 10% off your subscription with the code COMMON at checkout to access over 10,000 scenes to add to your games today. This week on Table Fables, I'm joined by Dave to talk about adding players into existing campaigns. The how, the when, and the why. Welcome to We Speak Common. And welcome back to the, I was going to say the table or the sofa. None of those things exist. We're talking over the internet. Dave, how are you?
Hey, man. I'm all right. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm going to pat myself on the back. I was really proud of that intro.
It was a good intro. It was a strong intro.
That was a one take intro. I felt really good. Suddenly, like, just perked me up by doing that. Yeah, I'm good, man. I'm, what is it? It's Friday today.
Friday.
It's the day we're recording. I have mega Friday vibes. Been a long week. I think you feel the same way, don't you?
Yeah, very yeah, long week.
Yeah, and all I can think about is the fact that we're actually going to get to play some D&D tomorrow. Because we've had a few blockers, shall
technical
we say.
Technical issues.
A few technical conundrums to overcome. But I'm feeling good, and I'm feeling good about TOA as well, because
we've got quite far in there now.
Oh my god, man. I think you'll be ending the module of Tomb of Annihilation in the next maybe six sessions or so.
Really? That close? That's wild.
I think, well, you're that close to like the fight with Aserak and the Soulmonger and all that stuff. And then after that, there's a little bit of module left.
Okay.
If you survive, and then we'll go into the realms beyond, as they call it,
which I'm very excited for.
I'm so excited, and I've been thinking about, so without giving anything away.
Yeah.
With Tomb of Annihilation, it is kind of I equate it to Rogue One, the Star Wars film.
Yeah.
Because it is kind of a suicide mission. Like, you're going to stop the curse.
Absolutely, yeah.
But the idea is that you're probably going to die doing it because Aserak's a big, scary guy.
Yeah.
And I've definitely played into that. And I think you guys have felt that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I was thinking the other day, I spoke to James about it. I was walking home from my, like, weekly shop a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
Classic adult life stuff. Which is like a good half hour walk. Like, it's not a short walk, and the whole time, like, the walk flew by because I was just playing out these scenarios. And I actually think I want you all to die. I think that's the, because that's not the end. Like,
I mean,
if you die and you haven't fixed the death curse, then yeah, it's the end, you lose.
Mm.
But if you fix the death curse, then there's potential for you to die and be okay. Like, kind
yeah,
of.
I get what you mean. But you can be brought back.
D&D way. Yeah, exactly. So basically, what you need to do is stop the death curse to ensure the campaign continues. And I think you guys can do that. But I was thinking about, like, my air quotes box text for like playing through those scenes on if you survive the fight or if you don't survive the fight.
Right.
And I think you not surviving the fight is a cooler experience for you as players.
Yeah.
So we'll see. We'll see what happens. It's
always
the way. I spend ages thinking about, like, the way I want my D&D games to go, and they never go that way.
Yeah, no, this is it.
I'm really excited for the set piece I've built for the battle, though. So
good.
That should be good. But I will say no more because I don't want to give anything away. You're not running any campaigns at the moment, are you?
No, not currently.
but you are planning a fun one shot for us for Halloween.
I am.
Which I'm super excited about.
I literally just messaged Ali because I was like, I need you to run Call of Cthulhu for me so I get like a feel for it.
Yeah.
Because I read through the book and I'm like, I kind of get this, but I don't. I feel I need to go through it to learn it properly.
I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah. So once I've played it once, I'll be like, I'm right. I get it now.
I didn't realize Ali ran Call of Cthulhu.
So she's not. I don't think she's run it before, so she's also new to it.
Right.
I think she might have played in the game once, but she's wanted to play for a while. And I was like, right, you need to run like soon for me.
Yeah, absolutely. Friend of the show, Ali. That's what we call her. I'm looking forward to it because so we always do a Halloween game, and for 3 years we did. I think 3 or 4, we did Strahd Must Die Tonight. So I've done Strahd Must Die Tonight, Strahd Must Die Tonight again, Strahd Must Die Tonight in Space.
Yep.
All of those, very fun.
Yep.
Last year, Wesley ran this like Underdark adventure where we started off as prisoners, which was fun. So it'll be good to do something really different this year.
Yeah, like not D&D,
Yeah, because it was either going to be that or like Witcher. But yeah. We've all played Witcher a bit now, so I don't think that's as special. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that, man. A bit of horror will be good.
Yeah, and I get to use my fancy wooden DM screen finally for it.
Do you know what, though? I've got Ray bought me a really nice fancy DM screen for as a thank you for some of the story arc stuff we've done, and I haven't got a chance to use it. I've got it like it's behind you can see it, it's behind me.
Yeah, I've seen it in person.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. Very nice. And I just need an excuse to use it. And I'm waiting for the Serac fight.
That's the perfect time to use it.
Yeah. Might have moved by then. Might be in the new house by then.
Which is good because you have more space as well.
It makes so much space. It's not even funny. So that'd be good. But yeah, so life's good. Everything's okay.
Yeah. Doing well.
We need to talk about adding people into campaigns.
We do. That is the topic.
Yeah. I've put it in the title, so we probably should talk about it. I was going to say I've done this a lot, but I feel like that sounds like I have a revolving door of players.
Just constant players coming and going.
I think, which isn't the case, but I think what it is I've had my core friend group has grown.
Yeah.
And as is the way with us, D&D is like one of the core ways we all bond. Yeah. So I've had you joined TOA mid campaign.
Uh-huh.
Ray joined at the start of TOA.
After you finished Dragonheist, right?
Jay left. And that was kind of an interesting time because that was a transition from one campaign to another, but it was the same story with different characters and things in the same world. So that's kind of similar. Who else? Sam joined at that time.
Yeah.
And then left later on. So, you know, like people have come in. I mean, this campaign's been going on for over 5 years, so people do know their life changes, you know. It probably will happen again, let's be honest. So we've got experience in this.
Yeah.
We've got experience coming in as a player. I was supposed to do it as a DM. We've talked about before making characters, like making a new player character for midway through a campaign because maybe your character's died or something.
Yeah.
So we've got the hours.
We've got the experience.
Yeah. I think we just start talking and see what comes out. That's what we do on podcasts. But when we,
That's what we do.
When you joined TOA.
Yes.
I'm trying to remember where it was in the story.
They just got to Omoon and they just arrived at Omoon. Yes,
true. How did you feel? Were you feeling, because obviously you'd played D&D with everyone before, I think. One shots? I think you'd played in a couple one shots.
I think I played Witcher with everyone first.
Yes, you did play Witcher first.
And then, I played with Wes in the game before that. But I don't think I've ever played with Ray before I joined. No, I had. We did that one shot where he was in his story arc in DOA and I did NPC.
Yes. When Wolfgang went off to his thing. So you'd had a couple of sessions. You kind of knew what was going on. You'd had the background. How did you feel as a player coming into something pre-established? Not a word, just established was all I needed to say there.
I think it was difficult, especially to get the group dynamic right, which is what I struggled with, I think. I think I've hit the nail on the head now with my newest character. I think I struggled with my first character because it was kind of like a pre-gen almost. And then I loved Cassius as a character, but he didn't gel well with the group.
I actually disagree with that.
Do you? Interesting.
Yeah. So your first character, was a bit tricky. It was a pre-gen, but it was a good route in. And I think still would have gone that route because you got a chance to see the other characters.
Yeah.
And there was no love loss when you died.
No.
Air quotes died. You weren't tied into the
no, exactly.
We really liked what we did with it, but you had a better idea. You're okay with the fact that he got petrified. Let's move on.
Yeah.
That's kind of how that went.
Cassius,
I think, added in a really nice anti-hero feel that the party hadn't had for the whole campaign.
Yeah, good. Well, I'm glad.
The group was... That was a bit of a weird stumble. The group was they started off as like a really good aligned party. And bear in mind, it's TOA. We've had a lot of deaths, so the group has changed a lot over time.
Dramatically,
I don't think there's ever been a quote-unquote evil character until Sam's character, Ronan, took his turn.
Yeah.
And became evil and left, like retired to become an NPC and he played a new character. That's the only kind of like evil time we've had. And that character is the only time we've had conflict in the group. And you weren't there for that, but
no.
there were a lot of really deep conversations. There was a lot of like distrust in the characters. And that was really interesting to watch play out.
Yeah.
It did come to a head and it did get to its point where we were like, okay, now we move on. And that's when Ronan transitioned into a full villain.
Yeah.
So when Cassius came in, I was like, okay, great. This is a character who's a little bit up himself.
Very much snotty.
Yeah. Out of the fire and into the frying pan kind of thing, or the other way around, however it goes. And clearly has his own motivations and is keeping them tightly to his chest.
Yeah.
And so people like Wolfgang, who's meant to be this pure, zealous, like good character who does bad things.
Yeah.
Just didn't trust him at all.
And no.
I was constantly waiting. Like, we were riding that edge.
Yeah.
When are they going to get into a fight?
So much. It was teetering on that edge for so long.
And I think that's fine. Like, I enjoy that.
It was fun. It was, you know, what the one of the most fun parts for me, and it was like an off-screen moment that happened, was when Junior killed Paku.
Yeah, so the two familiars. So you're familiar and Wesley's familiar.
Yeah.
Yeah, killed him off screen.
Yeah.
Because they both went scouting together.
Yeah.
And suddenly Paku, the flying monkey, wasn't able to be communicated with anymore, but Junior was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great, great moment. And immediately tipped off Ray and Wolfgang that something was going on here.
Yeah. And the moment where he realized that Junior wasn't actually a pseudo dragon, he was a fiend.
Yeah, obviously he's like against everyone. We should say as well, now that Cassius is a pile of rocks in the Vault of the Beholder, the Mirrored Vault, what his actual plan
deal
was.
Cassius's final goal was to
Did I say now that Junior is a pile of rocks? I meant Cassius.
I think so, Cassius.
I mean, technically, they're both for a pile of rocks.
They both are. Cassius's final goal was to steal the Soulmonger and use it to harvest souls for hell, basically.
Yeah.
For the cause of the devils,
So cool.
Which was really fun.
So cool. Yeah. And I now have a question just for me that's off topic. because now you know the in-game size of the Soul Armor.
Yes.
Because you came into it thinking, oh, it's going to be like a phylactery. It's going to be like
a small thing. Yeah.
And then found out it's fucking huge. It's like a big device. Yeah. What was your plan going to be?
So I didn't, I kept it the same because Cassius didn't know and I didn't want to be like a metagame in that way. But I think the plan was to take some of it or a part of it. Anything he could get his hand in. Yeah, right. Yeah. Or maybe steal a phylactery or anything like that he could get his hands on.
That's a great idea.
So, he would just take something spirit away to the naughty people in Baldur's Gate. And
so good.
Yeah.
See, and I was thinking as well, because you were saying to me like, oh, well, once we get to the Soulmonger, like Cassius is going to retire because he'll complete his mission.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, well, if you came to me and said, oh, I want to keep playing Cassius, but like it makes sense for him to leave, my response would have been, okay, well, the Soulmonger is too big for you to take anyway, so why don't you take a bit of it in secret and then continue with the party and deliver it down the line, or send it off via, you know, a chest or something, or whatever, or a spell or something.
I was going to, is it called Galada's Speedy Courier or something like that? I was going to just spirit it away. Because that's the reason why I was going to kill Ossley, because he was the only one who could counterspell that.
Yeah.
And Cassius knew that he was the only one who could, like, as a wizard, he would be the only one who'd be able to stop him from doing that.
Yeah, yeah. And it wasn't necessarily like, oh, I want to kill him. It was, if I have to, I will take that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Such a cool character, man.
Yeah.
But it's so interesting that you said that, like, it took your third character, the one that you're playing now, to, like, feel like you'd got the group dynamic down.
He fits into the party well. Mm. Because, number one, we don't have a lot of healing, and well, he's not really a healy cleric anyway, but he has healing compared to everyone else, kind of thing.
Everyone else, yeah.
Yeah. And also, because he's a me character, there's also that little bit of edge in there still. Like, he's a little bit, there's a little bit of emo, a little bit of, like, he's a little bit creepy still, and no one can really put the finger on it. And Ray's sussed it, I think, but he didn't say what he thought of it.
I think Ray's worked out what's going on too.
Yeah. So he's a very fun character. I think he's one of my favorites that I've done.
I like that he seems quite meek at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think he is a meek and timid character. I think
not at all.
Like, he'll get what he wants.
Yeah.
But, and he's not a bad person personally.
No.
But it's interesting that, like, he's come in and just through the course of the actions of the party, the two things that are your like quest hooks, you've instantly found. And
found them, yeah.
And he said, oh, aided by the fact that he couldn't tell a lie because of the tricks to God. Oh, those are the reasons I'm here. I actually really need those things. And they've gone, the party have gone, well, okay, well, can we use them first? And he's like, yep, that's fine.
Well, yeah, that's not a problem.
Biting his tongue because it's all these random people who can clearly look after themselves.
Yeah, they'll be able to overpower him by himself, but definitely, yeah.
So that's a really fun dynamic too. But
yeah.
How long have you been playing in the game now then? Like,
a long time.
Like 30, 40 sessions? No, it can't be that many. Like 20, 25 sessions maybe?
Well, when did we go to... So I first joined last year in December.
Oh my gosh, so nearly a year then.
Nearly a year, yeah.
Yeah. So that's a long time to feel like you're settled. And I think for us and our campaigns, a year isn't that long.
No.
Like, this campaign's been going on for like 5-6 years. So that isn't that long time, but as a player, that's a lot of time.
Yeah.
God, what did you do to make yourself like get to that point?
In what way?
Well, like you didn't feel necessarily like embedded in the group. So as you were playing, what were the things that were going through your mind to make yourself get to the point where you felt?
I think I'm just trying to work out in my brain, like I was trying to work out everyone's like how they work as a character. Because they're all very varying characters, very different characters, but they somehow work together. Like the dynamics between each of them is what I was trying to work out, how they worked, and also the classes they were. And so I didn't really have the full information on it, what everyone was. I kind of just was like, right, we'll go into it and see what happens. So that was the main thing I did, was work out who they are as characters. and what they can do as characters.
Yeah. And then like where you fit in that.
Exactly.
I think for me as the DM, like when I'm having new people join a group, like regardless of if this is like mid campaign or you're starting a new campaign, whatever, whenever a new player is entering a group that's pre-existing, I always like to do like tester sessions.
Yeah.
So like for you, it was joining Ray for that one-on-one.
And yeah, yeah.
Like playing The Witcher, just to see how as people and players
gel as players. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause everyone needs to get on, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
We touch on some tough themes in our games, I think, at times.
Yeah, definitely.
So it's important that there's like respect and
trust. Yeah.
Mm. So I always do those, and then once you're like in the full campaign, for me, and tell me if you agree on this or not, based on your experience with me doing it, it's there's two levels to it. The first is like expectations from me. So you're joining a pre-existing group, they're at this level, this is kind of what the story is so far. I need your character to have this level of like depth to it.
Yeah.
And backstory. To kind of feel real and feel like
they adequate to the like level of the game that you're at. Because if it was a new game, you could have less story in there. But because you're that far in, you need to have that background information there. Otherwise you're not gonna be as established as everyone else in there.
Yeah, absolutely. And like it's that typical thing of whenever anyone makes a new character in this campaign, they go, okay, well obviously I need a reason to stop the death curse. I'm like, well, everybody's got a reason to stop the death curse.
Yeah. It's you want to stop it. Yeah.
Yeah. But yes, give yourself an actual reason, but then you need something else. And the more characters you make and the further you go into the campaign at a high level, the harder it is to come up with a fucking plot.
I made one character before this one, which was going to be a rogue. And I was like, I can't come up with a good reason why he's there. Like, it was really difficult to come up with like an actual plot hook.
And I think I said to another player before, like when once we got into the tomb, they were going to be potentially making a new character. And I said like, look, by all means make a new character, but they need to be like fleshed out. Like you need to know their like personality traits and how you want to role play them and how they react to things, because there's not going to be a lot of chance to develop that in the tomb setting. Cause it's all about survival and puzzles and stuff.
Absolutely.
And I feel like we haven't seen a lot of your new character like coping with that stuff yet, but I feel like I get the vibe that you've got that down.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know?
Yeah, because he feels like a lot, in my brain anyway, he feels like he has a lot more worldly experience than the rest of the group, because he's like an older character.
How old is he?
He's 200 and something years old. I have an exact number on my sheet.
As soon as you said it, I remembered.
So we were talking about ages last session, weren't we? Actually, which is funny.
Yeah, Ray got aged.
Yeah,
gutted.
But yeah, we fleshed him out quite a lot. Like we were on that call for like a good hour, just talking about like all of his like life story and paths he took, which is
like
really
how
fun.
It fits into the lore of the world. Yeah, and I really like those calls, like. I dread making characters myself because it's hard for me to get something I love and build it over time. So especially when a character of mine's died, like building a new character for myself is
hard.
Not something I enjoy doing. But when a player comes to me and says, okay, I've got an idea, I need help. That moment of sitting down on the call, going through the lore, finding little nuggets of information that we can throw in and linking stuff in and rewriting bits, like that molding, I find so much fun. And then it pays off for me when I get to see it come to fruition in the game, like see it brought up.
Yeah.
That's a lot of fun. Like you've got the moon blade.
Yes.
Or a moon blade, I should say. And seeing you hearing you describing using it for the first time.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I know what that is. And everyone's like, what's this? And I'm like, that gives me so much joy. So like expectations is a big one as a DM, because you've got to get all that stuff right. And I think you need to be really open and clear about that, especially if you're a new player in a group.
Mm-hmm.
But then the other thing is, is kind of being like having more leeway with them, like the new players.
Yeah.
Or and the new characters, because it's hard to get a new character in a game and it be right as soon as it's in, like first session.
Yes.
Like voice is one of the obvious ones to talk about. Like if you haven't got a voice in mind, like straight away.
Yeah.
It might change over
time. I tell you what, I really struggled that with Keldrex. Like, I really struggled with Keldrex's voice.
Rest in peace.
Yeah, I just couldn't get it. I think I kept like accidentally going into Cassius's voice half the time. I think that was problems.
Yeah. I do that a lot. Accidentally go to Clap all the time. But yeah, so like, you know, player coming in with a new character and maybe saying, "Ah, I know we said this, but can I change it to this?" Or, I've described this, but actually, and it should be this. Or, like, I'm just trying to find my feet, and I'd rather they do this or that. Like those little bits.
Yeah,
you need to have the expectations and then the leeway to play around with them a little bit.
Yeah,
I think if that's there as a DM, you can just kind of help mold a new player into the group. That's kind of what you're doing, right? Trying to find the space.
Definitely. And I think this is probably slightly off topic, but instead of voices, a lot of the time I find it easy just to do mannerisms and like how they act, rather than, because I just normally use like slightly altered version of my own voice.
Yeah.
And then like with different mannerisms, I think that works well for me.
I mean, I'm the same. Like Orlo's voice is just an RP version of me.
Yeah,
it's just a lower, like it's the classic Empire Star Wars bad guy voice.
Yeah.
And then Kla'ath is the only one that's really out there.
It was super different,
The Southern Drawl. And it's nice to have my two characters be vastly different from each other.
Yeah.
Because I do find it easier to get into character when I've got a different voice. Like if I just talk this as me, I don't think I'd feel it.
No, I know what you mean.
And I think maybe you've seen that in games where I'm a player when we've done like big, heavy, like war scenarios, combats.
Yeah.
And we all get to that point where we're only thinking tactically and not role playy. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to fireball. I'm going to do that. And I'm not as excited by it because
I get it. Yeah.
But mannerisms is a great one. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And Ivan's voice is very out there compared to my other characters.
Yeah, that's true.
Ivan's a fun character. He's just a weird guy.
He's just so random. But that's actually another one where you join. Okay, so there's one we should talk about because you joined as a new character in a campaign that I was playing in rather than DMing. Yeah. And like trying to like, as a player, trying to open up to that is true.
Especially for Orlo as well. Like,
because he trusts no one, hates everyone.
Yeah.
Trust no one, hate everyone. Orlo's mottos. Well, look, I think that Ivan is mental.
Yeah, he's nuts.
But in a good way.
Yeah.
The trick there as a player was like, how do I... And I see this as a DM as well. The player's like, how do I rationalize the fact that I, as the player, know that this new character has to join the group? Like, no matter what happens, they will be traveling with us.
Yeah.
But at the same time, my character does not trust this person or know them.
The funniest part about it was
watching those conversations.
Was Ivan was just like turning up and you were like, why is this guy here? Like,
like fucking came in and saved the day and all. I was like, great, thanks. Who are you? Like, I'm just with you now.
Yeah.
Are you? Yeah, I've decided it. Great. Yeah. Do you know what? So many people have died. We need the bodies.
Yeah.
Yeah. We need the cannon fodder.
And it was just like at the Lord of the Lions meeting, and you were like, why are you here? Yeah.
And like trying to get Daylan to join the group in the tomb was so tricky. Like having him turn up and be at the end of the hallway and be like, oh, hello. And everyone being like, who the fuck is this guy? We've not seen another living soul.
Yeah, he was just there.
And like obviously there's that typical, like the party questions the new person and they like fill them in with a backstory and stuff. And you can kind of see the players going, great, there's the justification. Let's roll with it.
Yeah. Cool. Oh, he's a good person. Okay, great.
Cool. You've said the one thing that I don't now, like I trust you implicitly.
Yeah.
And actually I think Ray did a really good example of like getting you in the group quickly.
Yes.
Which was so niche to TOA.
Yeah.
So if you haven't played it, you can have the Trickster Gods inhabit the minds of the players.
Yeah.
And it has a whole plot thing and they should be doing it. It's the correct thing to do. But yeah, they all have flaws and abilities. Mm-hmm. And Moa's one is that you, when she's in your mind, you cannot lie.
Yeah.
And so
you have to tell the truth, yeah.
Ray went, okay, well, I'm going to trust you with this really powerful artifact and this god and this weapon. And we're all like, what? And he's like, no, it's fine, guys. And you take it and let a god in and suddenly you can't lie. And he's like, great, I trust him now. I'll ask him a few questions. Cool, let's go. He's with us now.
Yeah.
And I was like, do you know what? Fair play. Like,
it worked really well, yeah.
A star move at helping just induct this new character.
Which, you know, it was really funny with the bit, like a few sessions down the line. Well, I think two sessions down the line, since I joined with Dalen or one, when Dalen switched tricks to cancer, Wolfgang was like, I don't trust you as much now. And I'm like, oh.
Yeah. He's like, Wolfgang clearly does not like Dalen as much now. He's like a little bit more like unsure.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, is fair, you know?
Completely fair.
He's been with you for, what, 4 hours? He's
just not even that, probably, yeah.
Probably, yeah. But, like, that's the job of the party, is to help induct this new player and new character. And there's a couple of levels on that, because there's the character levels, which we've kind of talked about there, but there's helping a new player fit into something established as well.
I think me being an experienced player helps that.
Helps.
So if a new player, it's very difficult to get that vibe, especially if it's a new group with a new player joining.
Yeah. I think the best way that you can instantly like break all tension and just make someone feel like they're part of the group is to compliment them on their dice. And it's so easy to do if they've got dice from the dice dungeon, because all of their dice are gorgeous, Dave. I don't know if you've been on there recently.
I have.
If you're looking for some premium D's, sorry. I've rolled over that. If you need some, get it together, Ben. Come on, ad read.
Such a good intro.
It all fell apart. If you're looking for some premium D&D dice, head to the Dice Dungeon. There's a link in the show notes below. They have everything from resin to glass to metal and like everything in between. Pretty much every element under the sun can now be made into polyhedral dice. I don't know how.
You don't want to be made of polyhedral.
Do you know? But I don't understand how, in a world where, you know, we're all fighting each other and there's global warming and you know, everything's a bit shit, that we've managed to focus all of our sciences on making every single element available into polyhedral dice.
You don't want to do that though.
But it's
that thing will happen.
I'm here for it, you know, like a dice made of black holes. That'd be great.
Nice.
I don't know. Go and get some. They're really good. Black hole dice. Go and get some really nice D&D dice from the Dice Dungeon. And while you're there, at the website in the show notes below, you can have a look at all the other stuff they've got going on. They've actually just done a really cool partnership with the Magnus Archives. So they've got a special Magnus Archives set of dice, which are
they're
gorgeous.
Awesome.
And I don't know, maybe if you want to see some special Whispered Common dice down the line, support the show more, because I need to make sure people would actually buy them. To justify the cost of getting them made.
You just end up buying them all yourself.
Yeah, just have 600 sets of dice, all the same dice. Roll a disc, break open a new set every session.
Shrink yourself.
Be like that meme where you throw away clothes once after you've worn them once. They've also got things like dice rolling trays. I still use every session my dice rolling scroll. I love it.
You've got that thingy, Dragon Meat.
Got it at Dragon Meat, which they're going to be at again this year. If you're going, we are going to be there, yes. We need to sort that out.
We really need to do it, yeah.
It's like 3 months away.
I know, less than that.
I'm not organised. I am normally. They've also got books, D&D books. Obviously, there's a lot of sets and books coming out this time of year. So, look, anything D&D related, if you've just been paid or you're feeling the cold winter months come in and you want something to warm the cockles of your soul, then head to the Dice Dungeon. And that's a saying, don't look at me like that.
Interesting.
And get some dice or some books or whatever. Mm-hmm. And use the code WESPEAKCOMMON at checkout. You'll get 10% off your entire order. So the more you spend, the more you save. And of course, we are brought to you in partnership with Describe, spelled DSCRYB. Describe is the place to go online if you are looking for the ability to make your games really, really immersive, whether that be with pre-written box text by professional writers for things like spells, for like monsters, for locations. As a player, if you've made a new character and you want some like cool descriptions of swinging your broadsword or firing off your fireball or whatever, they've got all of that. But they also, for immersion, have beautiful maps. They have a sound library now as well.
Artwork.
Artwork,
loads.
Yeah. honestly, the Describe guys have been with us since they launched, must have been a couple of years ago now, and I've watched them grow. And I don't just mean in the sense of like they've added more and more scenes, because it's now like over 10,000. It's mental. I remember when it started off and it was like 400.
Yeah, right. I remember the days.
So there's thousands and thousands of them, but to watch their portfolios grow over time as well,
yes,
to have a couple of them on the shows before to talk about stuff, yeah, like it's a great little system. If it's something that you struggle with, the creative side isn't the bit that you're good at and you just want to get better, they're a great way of doing it. They've got stuff on there for free. There's a link below, but if you do want to subscribe, there's different tier levels to make it all affordable. You can get 10% off your monthly subscription every month for the first 2 years that your subscription is active if you use the code COMMON at checkout. And of course, if you're using those codes with our partners, we get a little kickback too, which is always nice and helpful. Go and check them out. Links all below. There's also links to our Patreon if you just want to support us directly. That's there too.
That'd be nice.
Yeah, thanks. Love it. Cheers. Going back to the actual topic, helping a player feel welcome into a group if they're new.
Yes, as a DM and a player.
I feel like at times we learn these skills when we're teenagers at high school and it's horrible and we're really bad at it and kids are horrible and mean and disgusting little creatures. I mean, I'm just talking from my own experience. When
okay,
I was
great.
I'm not talking about your kids, Dave, obviously.
No,
little angels. They're not
teenagers yet, so it's
No, give it time. My new house is near a high school, and I think that might be the only drawback.
I have screams everywhere. It's going to be children.
Kids as they walk.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do it. Just think about it. Anyway, you've got to like flex those social muscles, which can be difficult, especially if, let's say, you're playing in a group with three people, one DM is making it four.
Yeah.
And you all know each other really well. And the DM's gone, hey, I've got this new friend who I think, you know, I've been talking to you for a few months now. I get on really well. I really want them to play the game. They want to play the game. Let's bring them in.
Yeah.
If that relationship doesn't work with everyone, it's awkward.
Very awkward, yeah.
I've been there.
Yeah.
I've had it happen. And my way of getting around this is the test sessions, like I said before.
Yeah, it's a good way to do it.
Doing those one shots, getting everyone together for like a meet and greet session zero type thing. Just doing something other than the campaign first.
Yeah.
Just to double check. I think with Sam, when Sam joined the group officially, the first thing he played in was one of our Halloween one shots.
Yes.
Strava Start Tonight, which was, again, an event game like that, and a great chance to give a new player an ability to flex their muscles and be creative and be a bit different, show everyone what they're about, have the limelight, get involved. Yeah. So stuff like that's great. But then it's always worth like having a chat. If the group hasn't got experience adding new people in mid-campaign, having a chat and saying like, okay, your guys' characters are established, they know each other, they've got all this stuff going on.
Yeah.
Obviously they're going to be wary, like maybe let's not focus on the, oh yeah, but my character wouldn't feel that way. Like let's be a bit lenient to get the ball rolling at first. What are your thoughts, tips about like fitting in as that player?
Fitting in as that player, or as in helping that player fit in?
Well, either or.
Either or. I don't know. I struggle with this topic because I'm a very social person anyway, and I find it really easy to do stuff like that.
I'm the same.
Yeah. I think just be very open at first to play style, just like personality as well. Because I'm very, as well, I'm a social person, but I also am very quick to say, I don't agree with that, or, you know.
Yeah.
So you have that. You have to rein that in sometimes. You have to be like,
There's certainly like courtesy in it.
Yes.
If I think about our players, like if I was going to bring Wesley into a group that he wasn't a part of, I'd say to everyone, okay, this guy's a really big role player. Like he likes playing like wizards and being a controller, like a controlling character on the battlefield, but he shines at role play. So expect that to be where he flourishes, and like giving people that kind of expectation. Like with you, I'd say like Dave's great at combat. He likes building characters that are fucking weird mechanically. Like, I don't think I've ever seen you play a character with one class.
No, I think about it all the time, and then I just don't end up doing it because I have to have like at least one level in something else.
God, it's a sickness, Dave. You need
it. It really is.
So like that, I'd be like, look, he's gonna like he's and I'd say like with Ray, and I think you and Ray are really good. I lean on you guys for that bit of let me rephrase this. I think you and Ray balance out the role play of Wesley and James.
Yes.
Because Wes and James are both like really good role players. And James, when he gets into combat, like when he gets his he knows what he wants to get to. Once he gets to it, then he just does that one thing that he's really good at. And he's like, I've got my niche now. I'm going to hit it 60,000 times. And I'm like, yeah, cool. You spin away. But they get really dropped into the role play. And Ray and you both are really good at role play too. But you're really good at both going, guys, we've been having this conversation.
Time to move on now.
We need to do something else.
Yeah. Me and Ray are very similar. Our play style is very, very similar.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I think that's good. And bringing a new player into group, it's important to highlight that stuff and say like, hey, this is my play style or this is their play style.
Yeah.
Here's where I think it's going to come in. And I think I said to the guys when you joined, I was like, you've played with him in Witcher. I think Dave's style is going to really complement the party because of this, 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 and this.
Yeah.
And just being honest with your current group and saying that stuff and hearing what they say back and going, yeah, okay, cool. And then talking about it. Like, that's how you kind of ease tensions, I think.
Absolutely. I think the thing is, especially with TOA, like it's such a button pushing campaign because it's so like high stress and like you could like die any minute. Like your character, if you like someone makes a mistake, other players' characters could die. Like that's the thing.
100% playing TOA is one of the only campaigns it is the only campaign I've ever thought if I was playing this with any other group of people,
it'd be horrendous.
The campaign would have fallen apart.
Yeah, right.
Because there's so much like not debate, that we have had a few debates. But also moments of like me going, yeah, but that's not important. And then Maria be like, no, it is important, Ben, because if we get it wrong, we'll die. And I'm like, okay, fine. Like,
I mean, there's been a few instances where like, the one thing we're really good at as a group is going, right, no, this is important. We need to talk about this.
Yeah.
We have like a discussion. Like sometimes we have a break for 5 minutes and like, we'll all just sit here and just have a chat for like 5 minutes about situations. It happened with Cassius because I am an impatient person anyway.
Yeah.
And Cassius had one of the tricks gods where he would be like, one of them was not going to plan, not go with the plan. And
won't
the
other stick one to
was,
a plan,
Won't stick to a plan. And one of them, the other ones was recklessness.
Yes.
Which was just a bad combination with Cassius. Cassius triggered a trap, which was a fireball. And then it released that and then I think that brought tensions very in the group because everyone was very close to death after that encounter.
Having those moments to sit and talk and just
and be like, can we just talk about why
that happened and then put it to bed.
Yeah,
definitely. And I think as well, like I spoke to Wes after our last session. As we were all like logging off, me, Wes and James just had a little chat and left. In that you've got to the point in TOA, anyone who's played TOA, if I say level 5 control panel, will know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
There's a room that's very intricate, it's a whole level of the dungeon. That's really intricate, and there's this control panel, and when you find it, it's like described, and there's a big piece of artwork that comes with the adventure to show you it. And you guys were like looking at it for a good 40 minutes.
Ages,
and not touching it. And to the point where I said, Wes was like, I hate this puzzle. I hate it. Like, I don't get it. And I was like, Wes, you hate it and you don't get it because you are too afraid to touch it.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, but if we touch it, like in this dungeon, like we might die. And I'm like, no, like you can't feel that. Like you have to risk, you have to do risk. And like, That is one of those times where I've had to stop and go, Wes, you got to take the risk. Because if you don't, we're going to get nowhere.
Yeah.
And I totally understand where he's coming from with it. Because
horrendous. Yeah. Like, I've held back.
A long time.
Yeah. I've held back with Daylan because I'm like, I've just lost a character. I do not want to die again. Like,
yeah, I don't want to go through the process of making another character. Exactly. Yeah, I'd like you not to die until the final.
That'd be great.
I'd like someone else to die for once.
I've lost two characters in like a row. Like, I have been.
I know.
It's been brutal.
It's becoming like, it is a bit of a joke that you're like, Ben just wants to kill me again.
I joke all the time with you,
and I'm like. I know it's a joke, but I'm like, what's bad is that it's true. It's just you. I don't know why it keeps being you.
Like, petrified twice.
Yeah, the fact that you died the same way.
Yeah.
That wild. Just says something, doesn't
it? I think it's like, this is a genuine thing that in my brain, that my brain's gone, this is because you did that thing one time as a DM. But one time when I was a starter DM, I accidentally petrified a player when they had no way of reversing it. And I was like, oh.
Whoops. And now karma's coming back to get you.
That's what's happening right now.
I did that once with Mummy Rot.
I remember you told me this,
It's a bad rough. And you know, as a DM, when you read something, you're like, if I'd have read that in my mind, I could have retconned it.
Yeah.
Like here and now and found a way around it. But because I've read it out loud the first time I've read it, everyone's heard it and understood what's happened. Yeah. Now I've got to stick with it.
I did that in a session one.
Yeah, you can't even be merciful. No. At that point. I mean, maybe it is that. Maybe it is kind of coming back to you. But I promise I'm not targeting you. If anything, I'm trying to kill Braylar.
Yeah. Okay, great.
He's the one who seems to be surviving everything.
Yeah.
Wolfgang's been pretty close to dying.
He has a few times, actually, yeah.
Ozzy no longer has a spleen. He's been stabbed in it so many times. So.
Yeah.
If anyone has a target on them, it's Braylar.
It's Braylar.
Because he seems to be so
just
fucking
survives.
Invincible.
Yeah.
And he's such a weird character now, like this undead dwarf with a floating skull thing and
a dragon.
And a lizard. And a dragon. Like, just collecting all the voices. And now he's connected to Gully Rule. Like,
oh, yeah, too. Yeah, that's true.
It's, a lot going on there. But anyway, we've digressed. So it's about having frank conversations, I think, was my point.
Yeah, I think you need to be honest and, like we said, trusting with each other. Because without that, especially in, like, high-tense campaigns, you ain't going to survive life.
Yeah, and higher levels are harder for that.
But
you've got to build a level of... You've got to build a relationship between everyone quickly, basically.
Yeah.
And
that's
not always easy to do.
Yeah.
What would you say advice-wise for people who aren't social butterflies?
Oh, this is where I really struggle.
It's a tough one. Get over
Just
be yourself out there.
I think it'd be like this saying really wrong. Like,
go
have a drink.
Get drunk.
Just play D&D. Not like wasted, but just like, you know, just get you out your shell a little bit. And then maybe don't drink loads all the time.
Would you like the non-problematic answer?
I would take that.
Okay, let me take over here. Let me pull the microphone away from you. What you do is you do things. First of all, you let people know that, like, I might be a little bit quiet at first. Like, I just need to find my feet in the game. But, like, don't take my silence as, like, he's not having fun.
A negative thing, yeah.
Yeah. My advice is, before the session... Sorry, I was gross. I needed to burp.
So what you're saying is you need to not drink, is that...
I mean, if you want to... If you want a little rum and coke, have a little rum and coke, you know, as long as you're not an alcoholic and you're of age and all that, you know.
Of course.
What I would do is, before the session, do things that make you feel comfortable in yourself, they're happy with. So like when this is maybe a bit too much personal information, but when I'm going on a date and I know that I need to be like sociable and charming and like the best version of me and, you know, I was gonna say sexy. Gotta be sexy.
You at the D&D table.
And then I changed my mind, you know, but I need to be like suave and social and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
and
it.
As much as I would say I'm an ambivert, like I recharge on my own, but I'm also I thrive from connection.
Yeah,
so when I need to get to myself to that point, what I'll do is like I'll have my music on at home and I'll have songs that make me feel good. Like I'll sing and I'll
absolutely
dance to.
Yeah, it's like in that pre-night out, you just get hyped. Yeah.
Put on clothes that I feel good in. Like, you know, have a shower, spray myself. Like, so I smell nice. Like all of this stuff that I would do to go out and not just a date, like maybe even a social function. Like my mates have invited me around for a drink or whatever, or like we're going out, like all that stuff to get you in the like, mood for I feel good, got good energy, that kind of stuff. Do those things. So if for you, that's having a little drink, or maybe it's, I'm going to put on this playlist that makes me want to move around and makes me like loosen my body up a little bit.
But we were saying we all have, like a lot of us have character playlists as well. Like,
So like stick that on. Maybe for you, it's like practicing your voice so that you know that you're good to go, and like thinking about your character to get yourself in the D&D vibe. Like do that before the game, so that when you sit down at the table, and the tricky bit is planning, like getting the timing right, so that the moment you sit down, people are already there. You don't want to join anybody waiting. So doing that up to the point where you sit down, and then you can sit down and carry that energy through and be like, hi, so excited, like, let's go, let's play the game. And then as soon as the game starts, like you're in it, you're in character.
Yeah.
And it just kind of flows. That's my advice, is pre-game the game.
Yeah. You know what's good on that note is, I do this in my sessions, you do in yours, is have like a half an hour window or an hour window before the game, just have a chat. You like catch up on everything, and then you like, you're not bringing that into the game. You can just focus on the D&D.
Yeah. So we do doors open and curtains. So doors open is an hour before the game. That's when our linked calendar sets off the alert for the game. It says, hey, you've got a game in 15 minutes. Everyone who wants to can join. So we usually play at 7:30. So you join at 6:30. Yeah. And I don't think many people get on an hour before. That's very rare. Usually it's like half an hour before or so, but the hour is allotted. And then that's when people chat and talk. And we did this because people were joining at 7:30 and then we wouldn't play until like half eight because people are catching up with each other.
Yeah.
So the rule is if you join at 7:30, you've missed your chance to catch up on each other's lives. We're just playing D&D. And do you know what? For the first time, it actually really paid off last session because
We were straight
into the game, straight into combat at 7:30, like, and we were all firing on all cylinders, and it worked really well. So yeah, use that time, implement that rule.
Yeah, that was a great, like, combat was like awesome. I don't know, I just really enjoyed it. Maybe because I was using a new character.
It was a good combat.
Yeah,
you did shred as well, so that helps because it makes you feel powerful.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I love clerics. I never play them that often, but I love playing them when I do.
I've got a lot of time for clerics.
Yeah, they're a beastie class.
I've never actually played one.
You should play one. There are a lot, Twilight's just insane.
Yeah, there's a lot of classes I haven't played because I DM all the time though, so there is that. But
that is true.
I have like stat blocks and things that I run that are versions of the classes that are fun.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've seen other players play them, so you know, I've lived vicariously.
Oh, wow.
No, but like I've experienced their power.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I mean.
You get to see it.
Yeah.
Especially now at high level, it's super fun when you can be like, that's really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. I think my final piece of advice here for being a new player in an existing group is really soppy.
Go on.
But it's just to remind yourself that you've been invited for a reason.
Yes, that's a really good idea.
So if you're joining any group, if it's mid campaign, if you're feeling the pressure, just remember if they didn't want you there, you wouldn't be there.
Yeah.
You know? So fuck it. Have some fun. Fight some dragons.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just going to continue the topic for a little longer now. But I joined during COVID, I joined a game with a bunch of random people. And it was difficult still because they were like right in the middle of a campaign as well.
Yeah.
But again, you just kind of like have to pick up cues and opportunities in that, which is, it can be difficult, but you'll get it eventually.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you're DMing for a new person, if they want it, if you think it's going to help them, don't be afraid to give them a bit of limelight.
Absolutely.
Oh, cute. I feel a bit sick now. I feel like I might throw up. Been too nice. Any lasting words? Lasting words? Last, final words?
I think as a player point of view, I think you should just try and, I mean, we're just going to get too soppy now. You should just try and be yourself.
Love yourself.
Just enjoy yourself as well.
Dave, as the great patron RuPaul says, if you can't love yourself, how the hell? I don't know the rest of the phrase. I've forgotten it. Fuck. I butchered that. What is it?
He's like,
if you can't love yourself, how the hell are you going to love somebody else? Or something like that.
We'll go with that. That's what it is now.
No, I've got to look it up now. RuPaul. It's been so long since I watched Drag Race. What is it? It's so annoying.
This is getting terrible.
I was making a funny reference, and RuPaul, if you can't love yourself. Oh, here you go. Here's a clip.
Are you going to play into the mic?
Congratulations. And remember, if you can't love yourself, how in the hell are you going to love somebody else?
I got it right. This is just a compilation. This is literally a 9.5 minute compilation of RuPaul saying the same thing
over and over again.
If you can't love yourself, how the hell are you going to love somebody else, Dave?
Of course, that's on YouTube. Amen.
Thank you. Where am I, RuPaul? Fans at. Okay, we're gonna end this right now. Thanks for listening. Thanks for joining, Dave. If you want to get involved with the conversation and the RuPaul quoting, then you can over the best place for it on the Discord. We Speak Common Discord. There's a link below. You can join as a free member right now. Just get involved in the conversations, have a chat. We've got channels for Baldur's Gate chat. We've got channels for building encounters. We've got a book corner. We've got all this stuff, and we
so
all
many
just
fun
kind
things.
Of. We just kind of talk shit to each other all the time. It's great. And if you want a little bit extra from it and you want to support We Speak Common in any way, then go to the Patreon where you can join at different tiers. Help us keep this thing going, but also get a bit more out of the server. Check out our partners, The Dice Dungeon and Describe. Their links are below. That's it. We're on all the socials. All the links are below. You know what to do. It's been 5 bloody years of this thing. And if you're new, welcome. We hope you enjoyed it. Dave, I'm going to go and watch Drag Race now, apparently.
Apparently. This is your new thing that I've never heard you talk about before until now.
I've watched... Are you kidding?
No, I'm being serious. You've never told me about this.
I went through... before I knew you, I went through... This is wild. I went through a course of watching all of the Drag Races. So I watched like 10 seasons of it.
Wow.
And then UK Drag Race came out and I watched like... the first season and just wasn't in it anymore. I watched too much Drag Race that I don't like it anymore. overexposed myself to RuPaul's Drag Race.
Brilliant. Anyway, we should go now.
Yeah, we should. Let's leave. Right, bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the We Speak Common podcast network. If you enjoyed the show, be sure to leave a review on your platform of choice and share us with a friend or D&D group near you. If you'd like to directly support the network and the production of new shows like the one you heard today, head to the description of this episode or our social media pages for a link to our Patreon page. You can connect with the show on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at We Speak Common. The network theme is Street Dancing by Timecrawler 82 and is held under a Creative Commons 4.0 license. You can find it on the Free Music Archive.